The governor goes on the road to salvage his pre-kindergarten proposal. Will lawmakers bring it back? Mayor Ballard pursues tougher gun penalties. A soccer team owner seeks stadium funding, and the effort to legalize hemp advances. That plus Mike Delf's new seating assignment and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending February 28, 2014.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.
This week, Mike Pence is trying to salvage his proposal to establish vouchers for preschool education. As part of that effort, the governor visited a preschool classroom at the Shepherd Community Center on the east side. He also made a school visit in Evansville. Pence is seeking to give vouchers to 1,000 students in a pilot program, but some of his fellow Republicans in the state Senate eliminated it, instead calling for a summer study of the costs and benefits of early childhood education.
I think the time is now to start a voluntary pre-K scholarship program for our most disadvantaged children. But I also think Indiana would do well to take time to study not only a pilot program that's launched, but also to study other programs in other states around the country.
Is the Pence agenda in trouble? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Tim Berry, Leslie Weidenbender, editor at thestatehousefile.com, and John Ketzenberger, president of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. I'm Wish TV Statehouse reporter Jim Shella. Ann Delaney, this is a rare case where Democrats are on the same side as the governor. How do you explain that?
Well, you know, if we could have looked ahead after Mike Pence was elected with two supermajorities in each house and saw that he was going to completely fail with his legislative agenda. It's not in trouble, it's dead. His entire legislative agenda is dead, buried, and they're having the funeral service.
So, maybe, you know, an overstatement there. Everything is moving. Everything is moving, but the substance has been reduced.
Yeah, reduced. You need a magnifying glass to find it. They're allowing him to save some face, which is what supermajorities will allow you to do, I guess. But in terms of actually accomplishing anything that he set out to accomplish, from HJR3 on down, he's failed.
HJR3 wasn't on his agenda.
Oh, no, but he completely supported it, as he told everybody, okay? And what good did that do the bill? None.
Will the governor get vouchers back this year?
You know, the governor had a very aggressive legislative agenda this year. In my years in the State House, typically they don't like to open up the budget process when it's not a budget year. They certainly are moving the process forward, moving the ideas forward. And I think we're going to see this continue to come to reality, whether it's this year or next year's session. I don't know which yet. We're now getting into the time where the legislature really starts, the last 2 weeks of session.
I got to say, Jim, I actually think that he has accomplished far more and is going to get more out of his agenda than I thought was possible at the beginning of the year. I never thought they would allocate even $200 million toward additional road funding.
Even though he asked for $400.
He asked for $400, he's going to get $2, and I'm very surprised by that. I'm surprised they're even doing a major study on kindergarten, and he's going to get some kind of tax cut, whether it's a corporate income tax cut or some kind of change in the personal property tax. Something is going to happen, And I honestly didn't think that would happen either. So I'm surprised.
Super majorities. What do you mean you didn't think it would happen?
Well, I didn't.
Well, but in every example that Leslie just cited, those are all his key agenda items, he's only getting a fraction of what he sought.
It's what we saw last year with the personal income tax, the reduction that he wanted. He ended up getting half of what he wanted in that regard. And that's not unusual, I guess. I'm not sure he's going to get business personal property tax beyond the study committee, the Blue Ribbon Committee, but we'll see. There's 2 weeks to go. And I won't quarrel with your assertion that he's getting something out of this session. But it's really hard when he started the session, actually last fall, when he said we're $140 million behind, we have to go into austerity measures, and then he comes out and advocates for a lot of new spending or forfeiting revenue. What's the legislature supposed to think? They felt a little whipsawed by, I think, the governor's movement on that issue. So I do think he's going to get something out of this session. It's not going to be what he had hoped for, but, you know, they are really setting up for next year.
Back to preschool. Democrats have advocated for this, but they've been
for kindergarten.
But they've been opposed to vouchers for the most part. So it's interesting to see them saying that they'd go for the vouchers.
I think anything that would move this state towards the 21st century would be a good thing. And mandatory kindergarten is a must. We don't even have that in this state. And then we're talking about preschool. We ought to have preschool available to any child who needs it or wants it. And then and kindergarten ought to be mandatory. But back to the other point, though. When he set up this agenda, he had the supermajorities. Okay, they didn't do their homework. They didn't consult with the legislature. They don't recognize a separate but equal branch of government. And that's the result of this. Because if they had talked about this before, he could have been set up to have a series of victories scaled back to what they would agree to, and he didn't do that. He doesn't know what he's doing.
Back to preschool again. 41 states make an investment in preschool education. Right. Are we behind the curve?
I'll tell you what. Democrats talked about full-day kindergarten for years. It was Republicans that delivered on it.
We don't have full-day kindergarten across the board.
It's not mandatory.
It's not mandatory, but we have full-day kindergarten offered across this state, and it was a reality of a Republican-led legislature and a Republican governor that did so, making sure that our school children are kindergarten-ready and ultimately career and college-ready is something that our Republican agenda is focused on.
Yeah, and it's the Republican Senate that denied the full-day kindergarten a long time ago, by the way, just
when Democrats were in control. You mentioned the money. The money for the study is not a problem. The problem is the eligibility requirements that the governor is seeking, 185% of poverty, and if it gets beyond a study, how much that would cost the state, right?
That's correct. They're really focusing on, you know, moving the idea forward, moving the process forward, so that next year, if they don't allocate the dollars this year, next year in a budget year, they're ready to do so.
Well, but this is a big financial thing. I mean, one of the things that Senator Kenley, the appropriations chairman, has continued to say is that all of these issues need to be considered in a budget year so they can be weighed against other priorities. John's right. There's not a ton of money. There is some concern about money, and there's some additional spending coming up already, and they're talking about cutting taxes.
Yeah, but the other thing is they don't look at the long term. They don't look at what happens when kids get into good preschool programs and kindergarten programs and succeed in school and don't drop out.
That's why they're going to do a study, right?
Well, yeah, but this has been studied in 41 other states. How many times do you have to look at it?
Mayor Greg Ballard went to the State House this week seeking tougher sentences for people convicted of gun crimes. The mayor supports a bill that would increase prison sentences by up to 20 years for crimes committed with a gun. He cited a recent home invasion as an example where a suspect served a short prison sentence before being accused of committing a new crime using a gun. Ballard says people who commit gun crimes should go to prison for a generation.
For criminals, current penalties for using a gun are just a cost of doing business. They are not a punishment, and they are not a deterrence.
Tim Berry, would longer sentences be a deterrent?
Well, we're seeing right now individuals...
Criminals don't generally check the criminal code before they commit a crime, right?
Well, but it put them away, and they wouldn't be back out on the street committing a crime in just a few short years later. And that's the situation that we have, and I give the mayor credit for going to the legislature, working with the legislative process to take some corrective action. This isn't just a problem here in Indianapolis. It's a problem across the state. and Greg Ballard stepping up to make a difference.
It's a bigger problem here in Indianapolis. When you look at the crime statistics across the country, the trend has been down on violent crimes and murders, and not here. We're now above the national average.
Indianapolis was listed as one of the top 10 dangerous cities on one study this
exactly.
week.
Exactly, and that shows, and it's been peaking like that all during the time Mayor Ballard's been in as mayor. And in addition to that, this is the most blatantly political move I've seen. Okay.
How so?
Because you already have enhancements on gun sentences.
Five years.
But if you commit a robbery with using a gun or a rape while using a gun or anything else, it escalates the level of felony up. If you really wanted to do something about gun crime here, you'd stand up in front of that legislature and say, we need background checks at gun sales. But he's not willing to do that, because that means the NRA may be angry at him. So what he does is he puts a little facade up there and says, I'm really doing something, even though I don't have enough police on the streets. I'm doing something about this. It's just not the case.
Is that right?
Is what right?
that he's trying to redirect the attention here? Don't look at the police department.
Well, there are
look at the laws.
There are tools, as Ann notes, there are tools in the legal arsenal that allow you to enhance those sentences if you want to do that and you feel like that's the thing to do. The thing I think that the legislature is going to have trouble with, and maybe I'm wrong about this, but we just moved away from determinate sentencing last year, and already we're talking back about making determinate sentences another part of the process. I'm not sure the legislature wants to do that. So if you've already got those tools, then why don't you use them?
Well, it's interesting that this is all going on while they're completing a complete rewrite of the criminal code and all sentencing, and then he's coming in and saying, hold it, look at one more crime.
Yeah, one of the reasons that Indiana needed to look at a rewrite of the criminal code is because over time, every legislator comes to Indianapolis with some crime or something that's happened, and they want an enhancement of a penalty, or they want to create a new crime. And over the years, that gets everything out of whack. What they're trying to do right now is make sense of everything, and then you can see that already, you know, we're just one
Before
year out
done.
Of that, and we're already looking at new enhancements.
Well, 1 year from the rewrite, but it hasn't taken effect.
It hasn't taken effect, and they're still trying to make it all work.
All right. The idea of public financing for a downtown soccer stadium in Indianapolis is getting kicked around by Democrats. House Minority Leader Scott Pelath says Democrats in the Indiana House feel blindsided by the proposal to let the Indy 11 capture the sales and ticket tax money the team generates to help pay for an $87 million stadium. That plan, approved by the Ways and Means Committee and ultimately the full House, will be the subject of a conference committee in coming days. Pelath says it's a sign of misguided Republican priorities.
Yet another very rich man came in with a big wad of bills in his pocket and stuck his hand out for more taxpayer money to build yet another sports venue. That's not economic development. That's not vision. That's just another place for people to sit on their duffs while the dessert cart rolls by.
John Katzenberger, is that real economic development?
Well, let's just take a minute to soak that quote in, because that's probably one of the gems of the legislative process that I've heard in a long time. However, that said, I think given the context in which Indianapolis is operated, he's probably not right about that. This is an economic development because of the other economic developments around sports that we've done downtown. We're talking about a key piece of land, the redevelopment of the old General Motors plant, which is just south of the existing Lucas Oil Stadium. So I think in context, it is an economic development question. But there really are, I think, very good questions about whether, you know, the funding mechanism is right, and they still have to work that out.
Well, this was tacked onto a bill calling for enhancements to the Coliseum in Fort Wayne, which helps win some votes for it, yet it passed the House with less than 60 votes, which means bipartisan opposition.
I think that this is a case where, you know, the underlying bill, which has to do with the Coliseum in Fort Wayne, you're talking about an established building with a track record of attracting conventions, sports, those kinds of things. With the Indy 11 stadium, I mean, we're talking about building a stadium for a team that is unproven at this point. Obviously, there is a tremendous amount of interest in Indianapolis about the team, but whether or not there's enough to sustain a stadium, those kinds of things, I think that's a question mark in a lot of people's minds.
Well, should they be required to play a season and demonstrate ticket sales before they get this sort of public assistance?
Well, first of all, Public assistance, that's the question. I mean, this is not being paid with additional tax money. It's coming from dollars generated from the team.
Dollars that would otherwise that would otherwise go to the state.
But it's
under existing tax laws.
But it is not just going to be used for a soccer team. This is going to be used for high school marching bands and
the NCAA wants to use it for some
football and lacrosse and marching band contests, you name it.
Concerts, maybe.
But I'm not sure that I'm not sure that's really been sold. I'm not sure this has had the public discussion that you would expect something like this to receive.
But right now,
that's because
ticket
they slipped
sales.
It in at the last minute. There was no debate about this before. They put it in as a second reading amendment to an unrelated bill.
They put it in committee. They put
on
it
an unrelated bill, and they don't have. Didn't when the Pacers came? Didn't they play at the Coliseum for a number of years while they generated support first, and then went to the season tickets? I don't understand what's wrong with that model now. Or at the very least, they should do as my husband suggested and get guarantees that if this does tube, that taxpayers aren't left holding the bag for $87 million.
Where did the Colts play? Or, oh, they built that stadium before they came?
That was another Republican move, as I recall.
And it certainly has been successful
well,
for
we
this
don't,
community.
Well, we don't have the same commitment to soccer in Indiana that we do to basketball and to football.
You tell the tens of thousands of youth soccer players and parents that drag their kids around to soccer events
and
all over.
If that's the case, then they can play at the Carroll Stadium, and money can go to fix that up and to fix up the natatorium. And if they have that kind of support, then I'll be all for it.
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question is, is public financing of a new soccer stadium a good idea? Your choices are A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, was Mike Delf's behavior surrounding the gay marriage debate senatorial? 79% said yes, 20% said no, 1% said defined senatorial. Big response, over 8,000. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Indiana is one step closer to legalizing hemp. A committee in the Indiana House voted unanimously for a bill that would clear the way for hemp production if the federal government gives the go-ahead. It's an effort supported by people who want legalized marijuana, but it's not considered to be a step in that direction. Instead, the hemp would be used for medical and industrial purposes. Bob Kraft is in favor of it.
There are all sorts of applications for the product, and there really is no reason whatsoever to continue to keep it on the restricted crop list.
I don't think they're going to even bring it up on the table until the federal law recognizes it. I just don't see it here in Indiana.
And that's Bill Levin of Real Legalize Indiana talking about the possibility of legalized marijuana here. Leslie Weidenbender, is legalized marijuana out of the question in Indiana?
Well, I think you could see from across the nation that no. I mean, it's not. I mean, that train is rolling. Do I think Indiana will be one of the last states to legalize it? I do, definitely. I do think this hemp bill has a lot of momentum, and I expect that to end up becoming law. Although with federal rules the way they are, it can't make a difference right away.
You need the federal government to act first. What's the hemp going to be used for?
You can use it for, it's amazing the number of things you can use it for. You can actually use it to produce food, textiles. Rope is obviously the most natural thing that people think about, but there are a lot of products out there.
There was a lot of hemp production in Indiana during World War II.
Yeah, and a lot of it ended up as ditchweed along railroad tracks that a bunch of teenagers all over the state thought that they could get high off of later. But I think that Leslie's right about
this. Do you know
this.
About that?
I don't know. I read it in a book somewhere.
I once covered a bust.
Not mine.
No.
I think Leslie is right about the train rolling, to continue about trains, and I think that I wouldn't have believed in 1993 that Indiana would have been among the early adopters of gambling. So, you know, there's a lot of revenue to be made. We're seeing that in really small spurts from Colorado's early returns. We talked about the need for tax revenue earlier, and if the legislature decides that might be a good alternative, we may see some momentum come in a hurry for that.
Does this seem like a move that's out of character for Indiana?
Well, I think it has the potential for generating jobs, and it looked to me from the statute that they had all kinds of safeguards about not having it turn into marijuana for recreational use. So it seems to make sense. If the federal government opens the door, why not be ready to produce it?
And it also makes sense, does it, that the people seeking legalization of marijuana would like to see this first because they think it helps open their door?
They probably see that. I'm not sure that there is that connection or that the legislature looks at it from that perspective yet. I think they're looking at a perspective of, you know, growing agriculture in this state.
Moving on, an Indiana bill cracking down on trespassers who cause property damage on farms has won House approval and is headed to the governor. It was known originally as the Ag Gag Bill, but is no longer. The measure was revised multiple times in the state Senate after the Hoosier State Press Association and animal rights groups blasted it as an attempt to restrict whistleblowers on animal treatment, particularly factory farms. Earlier versions would have banned videotaping or photography without permission. And Delaney, is this evidence that on occasion the legislative process works?
Yes, actually it can. I mean, you have people point out what a transgression that earlier bill was, and all this does, as I understand it, is enhance the penalty. So it makes farms the equivalent of public property in terms of the penalty, and I don't think anybody could dispute that illegal trespassing or damaging personal property should be punished. So how about that?
You know, this is one of those that showed up in the category of a solution without a problem, some people thought, as the Ag Gag Bill, part of a national effort that was being pushed by some people who had their own interests. And yet now it's come around to be something that everybody supports. That is kind of unusual.
What, you don't think that people support things at the legislative process when they work together and come together through the process, Jim?
I think that sometimes things show up from that are something of a wedge issue, and it's hard to get that turned around into something meaningful.
I think it's the focus. They recognize that the focus was really about promoting Indiana agriculture and moving it forward, and that's what the bill really's main intent was, is to allow farmers to do their job and be productive.
I don't think that was the main intent
now
of the original bill.
Well, I mean, seriously, this is kind of unusual, isn't it?
Two years. Sure, and if you remember, this blew up at the end of the last session. The speaker killed this bill at the very last second after it had become incredibly expansive. If the bill had passed last year, I mean, we'd be in a completely different situation than now. I mean, this is a shadow of what it originally was. We would be in court.
And I do think that there's a lesson to be observed here, not necessarily learned, but cooler heads prevailed, and they worked through the system. And I think Jim's exactly right in the sense that we aren't in court. This will do what people think it needs to do, and it has to ensure that the property rights of farmers are protected, and that free speech still exists, so good. Mm-hmm.
Finally, Republican State Senator Mike Delf of Carmel has been assigned a new seat on the Senate floor for violating GOP protocol. Senator Delf was in that new seat early Monday. He intentionally made sure that he was the first senator on the floor in an effort to send the message that he accepts the consequences of his actions and is ready to move on. Delf also lost a leadership position and staff assistance because he tweeted the outcome of a private caucus debate. He's now in a seat that was occupied by Democrat Karen Tallien, and she says she doesn't like it.
My back row seat, and I know one way to get it back.
How?
Make sure Mike Delf is not reelected next year.
I mean, as far as I think the Republican caucus is concerned, that may be the worst possible outcome for discipline, is if you're actually seated next to the backbench Democrats.
And that's Mark Stoops of Bloomington, a Democrat who now sits next to Delf. Tim Berry, how many people are being punished in this deal?
Obviously, Karen Tallien doesn't like her new seating assignment.
Mark Stoops doesn't either.
Mark didn't move.
That's right. He didn't move.
He's stuck.
Karen Tallien suggests that they can beat Mike Delf in November. That's going to be tough in that district.
Well, it's a tough district, but, you know, you don't often get a state senator attacking his constituents and the churches in his district by name for doing everything to destroy the Republic and everything else he tweeted out there. So, you know, who knows what happens?
He said he was going to make a statement this week about his punishment, and he hasn't. Is it best if he lies low?
Well, I think the last couple of things he did didn't work out for him quite as well as maybe he thought they would, so I think he probably rethought that idea a little bit.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Tim Berry, Leslie Weidenbender of the StateHouseFile.com, and John Ketzenberger of the Indiana Fiscal Policy Institute. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/podcast or starting Monday. You can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity or Bright House Networks. I'm Jim Shella of Wish TV. We'll see you again next week.
Programming is made possible by Ice Miller. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
AT&T, working to enhance connectivity in Indiana by investing in communication networks. Dedicated to helping Hoosier businesses grow and consumers succeed both at home and at work. AT&T. Rethink possible.